Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh grade grandson of Saunuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, headman of the Upper, Middle, and North Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho.
Wonderful music of the
Halloween. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council.
Yeah.
Modern Asaga of Peru, the current kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the holy ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. It's a very sexy and very sweet story. Yeah.
You gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Join PBS at the $250 level and get both the DVD and CD sets of four discs filled with sensational 60s music, magic, and memories as our thanks for keeping PBS in your life. Make the call now.
You know, the wonderful thing about Hullabaloo is it's truly a snapshot into life in the 1960s. Not just the culture and the fashions, but also how radio was programmed. Back when we had radio,
I said his name, but now I forgot.
Songs. Now, subscription services, you can pay lots of dollars a month, maybe to hear one or two or three of these songs, but not together in one place. If you think about the way you first heard the songs, they weren't set in their own category. They weren't so compartmentalized that you had to listen to an R&B station just to hear Motown, or you had to listen just to a pop standard station to hear adult hits. They were all together. They were all played together.
Motown
all
was still
together.
My first.
And that's what this show really is.
Really,
and that's what's really represented here is what we felt, experienced, and listened to on the radio back in the 60s. This was the television component. And, of course, that wonderful freedom of spirit. That's my music right on television. So isn't it great that we can experience these times all together and not separate them out? That's what's so special about this particular show. And what's so special about the CD set when you join us right now is the original recordings by the original artists. Tough Towing and the Imperial Hurt So Bad, the great Don Costa arrangement. How about the empowerment? so many people in this country felt a man was actually saying, these groups were made for walking. The door for the fellows, they think about that. Tree Wilson, why had a hell of a ringing out that bell was moving in the jump. Love the Dan Woolick, reach out to me. Turtles, it ain't me, babe. No. It ain't me, babe. It ain't me you looking for, babe.
In heaven, I'll give you my perfect angel, heard from up above. My perfect angel, he's returned to you. Smile from your lips, bring them all in sunshine. A tear from your eye, bring the rain.
Gabby Gifford's husband buys an AR-15.
Big talk, huh?
Intended as an illustration of the need for more stringent gun laws. Why did he get one?
Well, I'd like to know why she's talking like he is, and he goes and gets a, I'd like to know that one.
They want to see an assault weapon. They come to my house.
We believe that what you see here on PBS should not only entertain, but also introduce intriguing ideas that engage your imagination and provide thought through musical expression. Whether you are already a member of this station or a new viewer, we want you to keep coming back to us and to rely on us for entertainment and ideas you can share with your family and friends. It is important to you that you have this opportunity to come to PBS to find something you won't see anywhere else. We are asking you to place a value on the service. Please join, rejoin, or renew with your gift to this station now. Or log on to our website and support commercial-free creativity and expression with your pledge.
Your gift to PBS gets you a gift. As our thank you for your support, for a pledge to PBS of only $60, you can receive the exclusive first-ever Hullabaloo soundtrack album CD with a dozen of the greatest songs and stars of the 60s, including Woman by Peter and Gordon, Elusive Butterfly by Bob Lynn, Downtown by Petula Clark, The In Crowd by Dobie Gray, Henry the Eighth by Herman Servants, and more.
You never hear it again.
At the $150 level, four Hullabaloo DVDs
will
keep the 60s swinging at your house.
There are so
many out there. To take the music with you in a four CD setup.
That I was trying to check with them at one time to see if they had like one-time hits or I don't know how they word that. The singer or group only had one hit, and that was it, pretty much.
He says, 8 discs of the greatest 60 superstars singing their all-time greatest hits. Become a member right now, on the phone or online.
Hullabaloo represented something very different on TV at the time. Nobody had ever used a cage. And basically, I got that idea from Whiskey and Go-Go on Sunset Boulevard out here in California. And I thought it was a fantastic idea, and it was very exciting. So, as you remember, we had Leda Edmond in the cage, and she became famous nationally as the girl in the cage.
Well, we started the idea of bringing Hullabaloo back to television. The first thing I thought, as did every man in America, as did anybody we talked to the show about, was, can you get Leah Edmond Jr. And she's here.
One of the yo-yo girls.
Wow.
Go,
I'm
go,
in
go.
The house, as they say.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I can't tell you how flattered I am that you even asked me.
Thank you on behalf of America so much.
I'm having the best time, America.
There she is,
all this.
What happened when someone came to you and said, listen, there's this cage. Would you go out there and dance?
Well, they didn't ask me, actually. I volunteered. I went, okay. Sounds, I could do this.
What's your view from, you know, from 10,000 feet above?
I think, well, I was blind as a bat. So to me, I could have been 2 feet off the ground. And I don't know, maybe just being a crazy 17-year-old.
She was 17.
It didn't bother me.
How did you get into feeling the music? Because it's the one thing I noticed about watching Hobo over the years and being able to present this now for the first time in many years on television on PBS. I love the fact that you seem so...
Here's why you're glad you don't live in Florida.
You're really dancing.
Massive mosquitoes, 20 times normal size, are coming to the U.S.
Are they not already here?
Florida.
In Florida.
And large numbers this summer.
This don't sound good, honey.
Because we were all very...
Scientist says the mega mosquitoes, known as galley nippers, left, could be in Central Florida this summer. They could be 20 times bigger than the typical Asian tiger mosquitoes. Jesus.
I mean, Megan. Melinda. Hmm?
I don't know.
Well, I'm
going to
be
27
in a couple
20
months,
times.
So
well,
God damn.
Of
well, you're not. Yeah, that's as big as a quarter. That's a tiger. And that one there on the right, that's twice the size of an Anopheles. That's a fucking monster.
Mm-hmm.
That's a monster.
And Miranda lives down there, huh? And my friend Bobby.
You get to go back and
Wow.
Yeah. Leah Edmond Jr. going to talk to her again right now. We need you to pick up the phone. Station.
A $150 pledge gives you 4 DVDs of wall-to-wall music and those fabulous dancers, and keeps the hullabaloo happening at your house. Share the 60s with your children and grandchildren. They've heard many of these songs, and this is the chance to show them the original artist singing them live. There are many more historic moments from Hullabaloo, and when you join, rejoin, or renew your membership, we'll send them your way.
Sagonia, a seventh grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru,
the current kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the holy ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. Blue coming to you from Booker County, the mysterious Ozark, and Mid-America.
Stratocaster.
How you doing, Jason? What's going on?
Doing well, my brother.
In Texas. We're talking. We're talking before the show about health issues my wife had. And some new things are coming down the pike. So what's going on in your life?
Well, I got your email where you wanted to discuss spirit. And I thought, gosh, what a great time of year to discuss spirit. And I've been dwelling on that the past couple of days. I've made a few notes here and there. Mostly just put it to memory, you know. It's inbred in me. I pray to the Great Spirit, God, many names, but some I call Father, to embed into my mind and to give me the right words at the right time, the those who are in need of the right words at the right time. And so if you'd allow me to give us a quick prayer here, I'd like to start us off with that and hope that everyone will join us in a meditative sort of prayer. Great Spirit, you call God and I call Father, we ask you to open our hearts and minds that we may discuss the meaning of Spirit. Give us the right words that we may also share in wisdom, hope, and in our dreams for a better world in which to live in and to seek out all things made by you, our spirit and the spirit of other living things, all things made by your mighty hand. Aho. Amen.
Well, it's that time of year, I guess.
It is, and I hear everywhere, Connor, the term the spirit of Christmas. And I was thinking the other day, well, what is the spirit of Christmas? And I have to honestly admit, it's been decades ago. I'm not that old, but decades ago, at least three, I sort of gave up on the materialism of Christmas. I had this girl that I was just terribly in love with, and she wanted this particular gift. And I worked and worked overtime, and I spent and I saved. I went and bought it, and it just cost me everything I had. You've probably figured out it was a diamond ring. And I gave it to her, and it turned out she was the wrong person. And it was quite a blow, because it was all done in this spirit of Christmas. You know, this spirit of giving is what I found it to really mean. When people say the spirit of Christmas, they mean the spirit of giving. Well, shouldn't we be doing that every day of the year? Shouldn't we give to others as we hope they would give to us if we are in need? And I would think that would be a daily practice, you know, not just one day a year.
That's right.
And why does it have to be a material gift?
You can hear me, can't you?
Just the gift of a word of passion, a word of love, a word of hope, you know?
I know.
Or an act, you know, some act of giving someone what they need, and that act may be the shaking of a hand. You know, something that simple. I was at the VA just Thursday, and I saw this elderly man. He must have been the eldest man there. And there were hundreds of men at this VA Texas, where I know. He looked like maybe the last survivor of World War One in his wheelchair. And it just seemed like he was just sort of in his own little world, and people, it's like they wouldn't look at him or something, like, oh gosh, he's so old, I don't want to touch him because I might turn old, you know, myself.
Right.
And I sat there, and he kind of looked over at me, and he kind of grinned a little bit, and I gave him a salute, and oh, his face just lit up, you know. And,
oh yeah.
And he was just, you could just see that it just made his day. And I walked over and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I could see that he had, you know, I think it was Parkinson's or something.
Oh no.
His hands shaked quite a bit, you know. And I reached down and I touched his hand, and his hand stopped shaking.
Wow.
And I told him that I was grateful for everything he did, and I was proud to be in the same room with him, and I wished him well for the rest of the year. And I just sat back down about 7 feet away from him. And the entire time I'm sitting there, we're waiting to have our blood drawn, you know, and you pee in a little cup and everything. And it can be quite a wait, several hours, you know, depending on how many people are there. And I must have sat there about an hour, hour and a half, and the entire time he didn't take his eyes off of me. Now, to some people, that would make them a little uneasy, and occasionally I would glance and I'd see, oops, yep, he's still looking. And I thought, well, it's fine, you know, it's fine by me. because maybe he could see me, maybe he couldn't. You know, maybe he had glaucoma. I had no idea. Maybe he just saw a blurry image. But whatever he saw, there was something in that communication we had that he needed. And there was something in that communication, Otter, that I needed.
Yeah,
and I think that's why we were brought together. That spirit of giving that we're talking about. So it doesn't have to be a gift in a box with a ribbon on it.
You know, veterans,
it doesn't have to, pardon?
Veterans, they really have that gift. They really give. You know, they get taken advantage of. You know, you can go into the service and come out with a broken body and you can either be bitter about it or you can turn it into something new.
That's right.
My wife is a naval veteran too, and she gets pretty good care at the VA. She loves going down there. She really does. A lot of good people.
Well, that's wonderful. God bless her. Some of the younger people who are listening to the show would go to. It's not only military, active military soldiers who we need to care about. It's, of course, our veterans who have fought that fight. And we also need to remember that these young guys, the average age of a soldier over there in Iraq right now is 19. These old swingers, as they call them, are 23 years old is the average age. Now, in Vietnam, it was different. The average age was 19 for the young guys, but for the swingers, as they're called, in other words, the leaders of the group, it was 30 to 35. So you had a little bit older people, older sergeants, older lieutenants, older captains to look up to and take commands from. It really troubles me. Today, we hear about the 11 soldiers who got killed in this mine that was planted under the driveway of this building they were entering to search. And they were all killed horribly.
What is your name?
So it doesn't matter how much equipment they have and how much protection they have. Evil is going to find its way to them. It's going to find its way to them. And when they come home and they're broken up and they're missing an arm, they're missing a leg, or maybe they just have a bad attitude, then they become veterans. And that's when I think military people are really needed and they need to be appreciated more than when they are in uniform. Because I think when they are in uniform and they're wound tight, so to speak, and they're armed and ready to go, we all know. We all appreciate them, and I think that they know it. It's the veterans who don't know it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So any act of kindness towards a veteran is a wonderful thing. That's a gold star. I would have to say for anyone who reaches out to a veteran and helps them any way they can, even just with a friendly hello.
Oh yeah, they're wonderful folks. They really are. Some of my, you know, when I think about it, all my favorite people are vets, you know, with an exception or two, and they really appreciate it. They really appreciate it.
Well, let me ask you, Otter. What do you believe to be the spirit of man, or the spirit of human beings? We don't want to leave out the women. What is the spirit of the human condition?
The natural spirit, or the one that comes after they become spiritually awakened? I think naturally, look at how men, I don't know. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, a lot of people live in some kind of garden. The native people here in America live in some kind of garden. But, you know, we know now that, you know, there were wars, and one of the Sioux tribes
I guess they were putting in a park or something, and they discovered an old gully that apparently for tree rings, they found out during that period of time that there was a lot of stress on the environment. And, you know, one tribe massacred another and dumped them in a mass grave and covered them over, you know. So, but I think it depends on, you know, whether you spiritually awaken or not. And otherwise, I think that the natural... just the natural man without a kind of a spiritual awakening really is you know, probably a little bit smarter than the animal, but animals do things out of instinct, but you know, when men do bad, you know, they do it because they've thought it over, you know what I mean? But animals do it, they do it because that's just their nature.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
So, you know, I think the spirit of giving, which is the spirit of charity, is really the highest thing that we can attain. I think it's the best thing for our soul, too.
Well, I may have put you on the spot.
That's all right.
A lot of people, much as I disagree
a lot with the Apostle Paul, I think he was full of bull on a lot of things, you know, especially about, you know, paternalism and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I have to agree with him about, you know, faith, hope, and charity. Charity is the best.
Is the greater.
Yeah. Many people call it the giveaway.
That's right. That's right. And to these philosophers and religious leaders, they seem to separate spirit from soul. In fact, as far as my greatest teachers were Socrates and Plato, only because I studied and taught philosophy and religions of the world, because I was so upset that this book, our book on religions of the world, this is a Dallas phone book, if you can imagine how thick that is, and there was maybe one paragraph given to Native Americans in terms of religion, and it mentioned that there were so many various tribes, they said over 2,314, I thought I'd never forget that number, that there were just too many various beliefs to mention. And yet they had a whole chapter on Hinduism, chapters on Christianity, chapters on Buddhism, and it just really amazed me. And so I got into thinking, well, if spirit is man's communicating with the command of life, in other words, trying to obtain that spiritual goodness that brings him closer to the light. Yep. Or to God, the great spirit. Spirituality into lost that light or has misplaced it. Because if we are to believe that all living things have spirit and all humans, once they're born, are given a spirit.
Yeah.
And of course, they're all infants are basically good until they learn evil. We have to learn evil just as we learn good.
That's a great real.
So the closer we are to the great spirit, the more goodness we have in us. And the further we go or drift from the great spirit, the more we are influenced by evil. So if spirit is that focal point, soul is the driving force, or let's just say the stomach of our body. We need fuel, you know, to keep walking around and doing things. I would think that would be our soul. And many people, including Socrates, Plato, and even Abraham and Moses, as far as that goes, and Black Elk, have pondered the question, well, is the mind the actual spirit of the body? You know, it's our mind that does all the thinking, you know, that tells us what to do, that helps us write essays or, you know, write a song, a poem, or do something with our hands, you know, to create something. So maybe spirit is actually our mind. Although I personally disagree with that particular belief, and I don't even waste my time thinking about it.
You know, they're discovering now that, you know, since they've done transplants, you know, the people that people got somebody's heart, and they'll come up with memories of the person that's deceased, or even parts of their stomach, you know, and they're identifying that there are certain cells in the heart and in other parts of the body that are very similar to some brain cells. So maybe the ancients were right, you know, that we had a heart and we had a brain, and it looks like that memory is not completely something that's behind the eyes.
Isn't that amazing?
It's in your gut and it's in your heart, and who knows where else.
Well, a long time ago, I heard my mother, first let me mention this. My mother is a retired nurse, so I sort of grew up around medical people. And her specialty was a surgical nurse with a heart doctor. I think his name is Dr. Auctioner, Alvin Auctioner. He kind of pioneered the first heart transplant. And she was the nurse who was fortunate enough to be involved in that. Now, they lost a few patients.
Yeah.
And in so doing, they discovered that when we pass away, all of us, no matter our height, our weight, we lose 8 grams of weight.
Yeah.
Now, is that spirit? Is that what the spirit is? Does it actually occupy weight?
Well,
if so, does it weigh 8 grams?
Thanks to the Hubble Space Telescope now, they now know, I guess it was early last year, they came up with this big announcement saying that they discovered something called dark matter, and they realized that matter can be only 17% of the matter in the known universe, and that what we can't see is well above 17%. So matter has weight. And I'm beginning to think that the natural abode of man is where the majority of the matter is, and that's dark matter. That's where we come from. You know, we come from a place where heavy, and you know, we have to fight against gravity and time and all those other kind of things. And I haven't got it all figured out yet. But we certainly know we're learning more, and we're learning it very quickly.
That's the difficulty, I would think. At least I found in my long years on this earth, the difficulty in being a good person or a spiritual person in such an evil world, in our surroundings on this evil planet, is maintaining that goodness, that spirituality, to hold on to being a good person when there's otherwise so much evil going on in the world. And it just seems like there's just so much more evil than there is good, you know. And we very often, you turn on the news, and of course, 98% of it's bad news.
Yeah.
A couple of the TV stations are throwing in a couple of caveats at the end of the news, some good news about, you know, somebody helped somebody else build a church, or somebody helped some children build a school, and, you know, that's all fine. That's wonderful. But there's just so little of it, you know. Always, I worked in TV off and on for about 20 years, also in radio, and the rule of thumb in TV news is if it bleeds, it leads, which means the first story of the evening is going to be about somebody bleeding somewhere.
And so sensational.
That's right. That's right. So we're surrounded by all of this evil, not only in the world, but in our daily activities. And then we turn on the television or the radio or pick up a newspaper, and we see and hear and read about all of these evil things. And I just wonder how many people sit back and wonder, where's all the good? And do they go out and try to find it, you know, or do they think about the good even? Because there's so much evil in the world. I'm looking at a little quote here. And it says, we will be closer to God, and although we see and understand that there is evil in this world, being spiritual means to be closer to God. For God is peace and love. Even though God is a jealous God, who will wreak vengeance upon your enemies. And who are your enemies? We are the enemies of God. Those who do evil.
We hope.
That was St. Thomas Aquinas.
You can use the inspiration to show your support for PBS by calling the number on your screen.
A philosopher and also, I suppose, to a major degree, a monk. One of the more intellectual Christians who ever lived, I suppose.
Available now. And
there's vast differences between men. There's vast differences.
They were really amazing people.
You know, like the ones that follow the conquistador wrote down all the crimes they committed.
It's
amazing.
I still believe in my heart and my soul that despite all of the evil that's gone on in the world today,
but
mushroom clouds all over the planet, you know. I think that's all it takes. If you want to push them a button, we're all vapor, you know. Where have all the great people gone? You know.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the giant ash just died. You know, it's interesting. You see the really, really good people dying, you know. And
And I'll tell you, this is all
people right. Like Princess Diana die.
And did you want to say in September?
Say the good die, yeah.
Commercial
yeah, that's right. And what I see happening, Otter, is too much hero worship.
I was
changing the channels the other day, and I saw them interviewing all of these pretty babes on Hollywood, you know, these Hollywood actresses, and they're all beautiful. You know, it's like none of them are, you know, plain Jane anymore. You know, they're all beautiful. And, million-dollar bodies and all of that kind of business. And yet, they're still vain. You know, all they talked about was themselves and how much better they were and how much better they wanted to be and this and that and everything else. And then, of course, with the men as well, you know. Well, my next project, this and that and everything else. And it's just amazing to me to try to find the great people. And I think that in this day and age, the great people are really the quiet people, the people that we don't hear about. People like your wife, who goes and visits veterans, people who go and visit sick people, who help out people and don't expect anything in return.
Like the table and hotel.
The people that we just never really hear about. Those are the great people.
Oh, yeah, unsung heroes. Yep, absolutely. My, my dad. He didn't think I appreciated very much, but I did. But he had kind of
a
professional engineer. He was born in 1917 and a professional engineer. It just was an unbelievable thing in his life. And
he was born in 1917.
Yeah. Graduated, became an engineer in 39, and he and his brothers, you know, between he and his brother graduated from the military academy. You know, they may have stayed just twice. You know, his brother was also an engineer. And one of the airplanes under his command snapped a picture that he started to see a missile
strike. And it's interesting, he was born when World War II ended.
He was born.
He was
the son of,
I get my Indian blood through my mom. Dad was born in Minneapolis in 1917. And he was the salutatorian of his high school and his university, and not just over his own college, but all of the sciences. And he missed valedictorian by like a fifth decimal point. Even got his college transcript, and they found out years later he actually was the valedictorian. But in spite of that, he received a fellowship to Harvard. He would have been, and he was the same age and was in the same class as JFK, and would have been in that same graduating class. And but his father, dad's dad was a Swedish immigrant, his mom was a German immigrant, and they just, you know, it was during the Depression, and you know, even after the Depression, they just didn't have the money to transport him. He got a fellowship, which is much more than the scholarship. A fellowship covers all your tuition and books, but the transportation just couldn't get in there. And he was a Johnson Foundation scholar, and he got everything paid for at the University of Minnesota, and went on to do some fantastic things in aerospace. But always felt underappreciated and. I felt like I didn't appreciate it very much. It wasn't that. He was from the old school. You know, he was like 37 when I was born. And, I had an older sister who was born in 42, the 12 and a half years between us. And Dad, you know, she just didn't understand me.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony. So it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for the body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce major side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but
they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
But I loved him dearly. He was quite a guy. You know, he was one of these guys. He went in. He was an altruistic person. He went into engineering because he wanted to help people. And you know, there were several times that he refused to violate his oath and, you know, sign off on a design. He knew I hurt somebody and lost his job, and you know, those things happen. You know, you know, I can't say that that I've got the same the kind of he had integrity. You know, and, he was a little nutty in some other areas. You know, but that, you know, the times he grew up and were just unbelievable. The depression and his dad did better than most. His dad was a cook and had his own restaurant, but, you know, they had table scraps in the restaurant. They ate better than most people back in those days. You know, I grew up in a completely different world. But, you know, there was this real dichotomy about Dad. He kind of resented me for how good I had it. But on the other hand, he kept saying, "Well, I went through all this stuff, so you wouldn't have to go through it." And then in later life, he resented me because I was enjoying those things. So, it's amazing. It's amazing. But yeah, he.
With your $150 gift to PBS,
you can. There are just people. They don't have it. There's no instruction that comes with a baby. And kids don't have instruction about how to deal with parents either. And especially when they become teenagers. You know, I firmly believe that kids become teenagers, they'll be taken off and dropped off on a desert island until they're 25. You know? So, I'm beginning to agree with that, I tell you. No, I've got a son just past 20, and, you know, he went through some of the things. But he's sure a good kid. And he went through, he was 9 and a half when his mom died, and he went through some tough times. But he moved to Seattle last year. He's been up there a year, and he's an apprentice carpenter. He loves it up in Seattle. So I've been lucky. I was told, it was really interesting that year before, and the year after my first wife passed away. The veil was very thin for me. The spirit spoke to me, told me a lot of things, and they told me. I actually told my wife Betty, because I remarried immediately after Joanne died. Told her that if we didn't raise Joseph with honor, he'd be taken from us and given to somebody else. Well, you know, I threw me to a tizzy. And, you know, go to the library and see if you can find a book about honor. You know, the only place you're going to find it is in scouting. Is the only people. And you know, thankfully, you know, I had a degree in youth leadership and had been an executive with the Boy Scouts for a few years, so I know a little bit about the subject. But honor, you know, as Rob Roy said in that movie not too long ago, it's that thing that you give yourself. And it's all the good things about. It's what we're talking about. It's the spirit of Christmas, you know. It's doing 12 months out of the year. It's kind of like, you know, when people talk about doing good 7 days a week rather than one. Native people like to say, well, we just don't worship on one day of the week. We do it all seven and. I don't know. I guess I was told very young that the gift of charity would characterize my life, and attendant poverty, which is good for you. It's all while you're going through it, but poverty is good for you. It's there's nothing wrong with the. I was raised upper middle class, and I had enough of that. I wanted to see how the other half lived. So I did.
Well, it takes a. I remember a song titled by Bob Dylan. It takes a lot to laugh, but a train to cry.
Oh yeah. That's the truth.
And you'd have to be at least our age to know what that means. You know, to have ridden on a train, saying goodbye to someone on a train, and you know, etc. But it's true. It takes a lot to laugh, but a train to cry.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
You were just talking about honor. I'm looking at a song that I've written. Well, actually, I wrote it back in 1984, and it was one of the more requested songs I would do at colleges. I don't know why I had it at colleges, but I guess maybe
what's the name of the song?
You know, the point of life when people are young enough to open their minds to learn it.
I want to know about the right.
And I'm looking at the chorus as you were talking about honor. And the chorus, if you'll allow me to recite it real quick.
Sure, go ahead.
Time may tell its tale on you. It could run out before you're done. But honesty will look out for number one. You may find a fortune or get down to your last dime. So do your best with honesty and time.
That's great so far. You know, it sometimes is very painful. Abe Lincoln was right. Honesty is the best policy. And, you know, I learned early, you know, rather than spend a bunch of lies, like most kids do, you know, you get caught in that and you tell another lie, and your parents remember that stuff, and then you forget your lies and they figure it out later. It's best just be honest and contrite and just admit, you know, the hardest thing I've ever had to go through was after my wife Joanne died. The lady I married, who's a very long-suffering person.
I will.
You know, she pointed out that I was becoming my dad. You know, my dad, like I said, he was old school. But, it's, you know, he could be a real jerk. And it's really hard, you know, when you get to be middle-aged, and I'll be 50 next week. And on the 8th. It's really hard to admit that you're becoming
Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield.
What you hated about your dad.
You know their names were Bill Medley.
Oh, it's so hard, you know, it's very hard to face negative things about yourself and to change them.
For me, brother, it was just the opposite. My dad was like my best friend. He was the Cheyenne part of me. My mother's side is Irish. So I'm Cheyenne and Irish. Many people say that makes me an Indian with an attitude, although I think that's a gross exaggeration. But with me, I always found it difficult to get along with my mother. In fact, we never did. We were, you know, it's like a bulldog and an alley cat. You know?
Yeah, I got along pretty good with mom.
Well, now my mother's elderly and very ill. I had a feeling one day about 6 weeks ago. Well, actually, 7 weeks ago.
Found dead in a hotel room in Calgary.
Stopped in to check up on her.
Hotel room
in Calgary. Diabetic shock.
November 5th, 2003.
Call an ambulance.
Half an hour before show.
In the hospital for about 2.5 weeks.
At the Western Michigan
University. And I've been staying with her ever since because I felt, well, that's why. You know, I was led over here to see how she was doing, to check up on her, and I found her in that condition. So now I need to stay with her for a while, and it's really difficult.
I'll have
I have to, you know, I have to keep reminding myself, Otter, you know, this is a woman who carried me for 10.5 months, you know, in her body. I was a late baby.
Oh,
10.5 months. Yeah, I was, you know, like coming out with a beard, you know. And she made many sacrifices for me in my life. And yet, she could do the slightest thing and it'll just irritate the heck out of me.
Yeah.
And I'll think, you know, gosh, you're as bad as a child, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just that she's very ill, and she's going through memory lapses and things like that, and she'll forget and leave the refrigerator door wide open and the milk out on the table. Or,
yeah.
You know, just things like that. all of the things of which we probably did as little children until we learned better.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's really a very, very difficult time for me right now, and having to help care for her. And she also has nurses who come by every other day or so and check up on her and do things.
Bill Medley's dark.
But they aren't here 24
Bill,
hours a day.
Bill Medley's
you know, they don't see what I see and hear what I hear. And go through
yeah.
All that.
My mom is 84. My mom is 84. Dad died a couple years ago, but
okay.
I guess he'd be gone 3 years now, the 7th. But mom is 84. You know, the women always outlive the men. Most people don't know that about 90% of the wealth in this country is controlled by old women, and because they inherit it from the men that make it and. They're all stressed out and they die young, you know, in their 60s, and their wives live till they're 90. And mom and dad wanted mom's brother to be
the blonde
conservator of the estate. She's in a rest home near Knoxville, I never get to see her. He said, "Oh, you can't take care of her." He's probably right. But it's tough not being able to visit her, because he just wanted the transportation to get over to see. And as far as the family's concerned, I move around too much, so you know I suppose she could be transferred, you know, to a home nearer to us. But I think they hesitate to do that because they're afraid I'm going to flit off to Mexico, and they might be right, you know. So. Yeah, it's really hard. My mom. She can't, her memory is such that she can remember things that happened 20 and 30 and 40 years ago. She just can't remember what was said 5 minutes ago.
Yeah,
so she'll ask you the same questions, and 5 minutes later the loop starts, you know.
Right up
really,
to the day of his untimely death.
Really strange. But so when she starts into that, I just start talking about all the old days. She remembers all that perfectly. But because of the diabetes, you know.
Right.
How do I move the
pain?
Is it this one?
It's really an awful thing.
Gotta get the arrows for the arrows.
I lost my father. He died in the 70s.
I get so tired of fucking all these
things.
Look, over here on this side,
you know, when I was 9 years old, I felt funny.
You get the arrow. Well, you just pull it down.
My friend, my pal.
Oh, wow. That's a good relationship.
Yeah, sure. Just love it.
You were that close.
One spanking my entire life. I was 9 years old and I stole the family car. And I got two telephone books. I think I was in the sixth grade. And I sat on the telephone books and had Coke cans. Or maybe they were even beer cans. I don't remember what kind of cans they were.
And
I taped them to my shoes so I could reach in the clutch.
Oh, my gosh. Did you say sixth grade?
Yeah.
Seven?
Yeah, you were about 11 or 12 then.
And I drove the car. I stole the car. You're not really to steal it, but just to drive it.
Joyride.
To Anaheim, California.
Because when I was a little boy, he used to let me sit in his lap and do the steering. And I'd steer, turn corners, the whole nine yards. I don't know. Listen, I was riding the horses, you know, like 11 months.
Oh, wow.
I grew up fast, I guess. So, I drove the car past the school, and, you know, all my school friends were out, and it was a big deal, and then ran out of gas.
Oh, you're lucky.
Right here on the main drag, so pretty soon comes a cop. And then, you know it, there's like 2 dozen cop cars.
I'll bet.
And they're all encircled, and then the newspaper came, and they're all making this big deal about this little 9-year-old boy who.
Unauthorized lover.
Sat on two phone books and stole the family car and went for a joyride and ran out of gas.
Oh my gosh.
And then the guy that died had called the group.
It was really kind of a joke in a way because he told me, he said, "Son, I hate to do this.
Yeah. It hurts me more than it's going to hurt you, blah, blah, blah." It probably did.
It turned out his father, my grandfather, before.
How do I go back?
Gave him beatings with a buggy whip. When he was a little
boy.
So he was physically abused as a boy, and he didn't want to ever do that to me. So.
My dad got it with a razor strap from his dad. Of course, he talked about he'd get it from the razor strap, but, you know,
as I got older, I said, Dad, I said, okay, now I'm wishing that you did because well, the razors dropped. Because when I was a little kid in the early 60s, it was those little skinny, people remember those little skinny belts that were in style. You know, we're talking about belts that were half inch wide. That's what I got it with. You know, not with the metal part. Dad would loop the belt and pop me a little bit. If when he could catch me.
Yeah.
You know. But those stung. But I think, you know, you get something bigger and wider and heavier, and I don't think it would hurt as much as that stupid thing did. You know. But,
well, that's what he used on me. He just, you know, slipped that belt right off, and it was one of those real thin.
Oh yeah. Belts.
Because he wore a suit every day with the job that he had.
Yeah, and my dad too.
And he whopped me three times with that belt.
Oh, man.
And, you know, the first time he said, was that hard enough?
Oh,
and I said, well, it kind of hurt. He said, well, I probably ought to do it a little bit harder. So he hit me harder, you know, right on the butt. And he says, well, what about that? He says, is that enough? I said, that's a pretty good one, Dad. You know, that was a good one. And he gave me one more, and he says, okay, that's it. He says, just don't do anything like that again. And then he left the room, and I found him in the backyard crying.
Crying in that fountain.
And then he told me, I'd always ask him about those strange scars on his back. And the story of his dad, my grandfather, whom I never liked. From childhood on up, I never liked the man. Told me the story on the buggy whip. He just, for no reason at all, you know, be late taking the garbage out. He'd get, you know, beat with a buggy whip.
I'll bet he had drinking problems.
He did.
Yeah.
He was what they call a functioning alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah.
He could be drunk as a skunk and you wouldn't know it.
Yeah, that really brought out really the worst thing in a lot of Indians. That Indians and alcohol did not mix.
Yes.
It's really, really sad.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfast and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingraham, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
Just imagine 52. Of course, when Carol Flynn died, kind of amazing to me, actually it was a heart attack,
it up
but
down.
Of course his liver was shot, because of his drinking, and they had taken out almost all of his intestines,
don't
so he
move
got down to
mouth,
9 pounds, this
and
man was 6'2" and weighed about 210.
Okay.
He died in 76. Well, in 77, they invented angioplasty.
Yeah, somebody's dead.
Of course, if he had lived one more year, you know, they possibly could have saved him.
He was a Leo.
Which I've had. I've had 2 angioplasties, and now I have 3 stents in my heart.
My dad had that when he was about 80, it would have been about 97, 97 or 98,
Holy
job.
Well, it saved a lot of lives, and I for sure wish that it saved him, because I really miss him.
Yeah. So your people were Cheyenne. You know, the traditional teacher around here, he was telling me that back in the 60s when...
Oh, shit, huh?
When he belonged to the Will Rogers Indian Club.
It's okay. I'll just read here.
He's from over near Springfield.
I don't know why it's called. I don't see
it. Yeah, Grandfather Richard Kramer. And he's a Chickamauga Cherokee.
You
know?
And you can't...
German.
You can't
and but he said back in those days, okay. He says most Cherokee, they weren't interested in Cherokee way. They were interested in Cheyenne way. And I know a lot of Cherokee people that really love Cheyenne way, and they say they're the friendliest Indians. That they know, they really love being around Cheyenne people. And they said during that period of time, because most of the Cherokees, they weren't interested in Cherokee way because it just wasn't appealing enough. He said that he became the last student, the last old Ottawahee, and the guy that could recite his heritage back 500 years.
Perform against the background of the
and it was really amazing.
Beatles fan.
Well, I wish I knew more about
not just brothers.
You know, my first.
They were supposed to go on before the Beatles.
Leader,
and they said,
Lakota. So I know more about the Sioux way than I do the Cheyenne way, even though the Sioux and the Cheyenne were, of course,
that stupid
very
guy, that Specter.
Brothers, if you will.
Yeah, the one that was found guilty.
And
killed. Yeah, Phil.
Dakota,
Phil.
Dakota, Specter. Dakota, and Cheyenne.
Yeah.
The Seven Fires.
Him Cheyenne. And
yeah.
They all
another
originated
man and woman,
from the Algonquin tribe.
Wrote all of
the Cherokee.
The
you
thing
know,
for the Vicious Brothers
many,
is
many other tribes
lost
all
that love of
feeling,
the record that was put out.
So really, that's what makes us all brothers. But they do have a way about them. In fact, the Cheyenne were called by other tribes, the Crow, the Sioux, and even the Apache. They were called the Beautiful People. And really, if you look up... the languages, that's what it interprets. One of them, the Lakota, interprets Cheyenne as to mean red man, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? You know, Lakotas are red men too, but they call the Cheyenne the red man.
I know it.
But in the Cheyenne language itself, it means the beautiful people. And even the early French trappers
came
here to America, and they came in contact with the Cheyenne. They called them beautiful people as well. They chose many of them, shall we say, hijacked a lot of the women as wives.
Have you seen? I'm not changing the subject, but I'm going somewhere with this. But a couple of weeks ago, did you get a copy of the announcement from Sydney Has No Horses, who's I believe he's in Oglala, Lakota, that he made an announcement at the council meeting of the Cheyenne River Tribe concerning. Now he's a grandson of Fool's Crow. He's also a Sundance chief, medicine man, traditionalist, and he said that he has been visited by a couple of angels. And also by Chief Bigfoot, Chief Sidney Bull, and
Black
Crazy Horse. And they told him that if the Seven Fires don't come together in some kind of unity, that there's going to, and he specifically mentioned some earth changes that were going to happen regarding the West Coast, and also something about the Missouri River because of volcanism. In other words, he also said this winter was going to be very, very, very hard. He says it's going to get cold. It's not going to warm up. And he says they're going to lose a lot of cattle. And it's already started, you know, two weeks later after the announcement. Here we go. We got these tremendous storms up on the plains. And it's going to be an interesting winter.
Oh, yeah.
Most people presume they were black, only to discover
the other day we had a
fact, like the phrase blue-eyed soul was coined for them. White men could sing black music.
We
no wonder. I
like days of heat. One day they set a record of 90 degrees, whereas in 1919, the record was 72.
Well, I don't know.
So, almost 30 degrees difference. But,
I don't remember.
The left, honey, this button right there.
Trees.
The button.
This
one. No, don't touch that pad. The button.
Often.
Yes.
And usually up here
if we
in
hold
North
it
Texas,
down.
Oh,
okay.
Sure.
Never change color. They just
once in my life,
drop from
the tree.
Look
real different.
With the leaves on them. It's not like in Tennessee, you're up there in your way where they change colors.
Because of lack of water. You always have a lot of water down there.
Here, I've noticed I have a big pecan tree in the backyard and other trees.
What does that mean, honey?
They've all changed colors, and it reminds me of Tennessee. You know, there's red leaves, gold leaves, brown leaves.
Okay.
That's just something we do not have.
But the follow-up, you bought that love
just always
killer.
Green, and then they
just once in my
fall
life.
Off when autumn comes, then winter
very
hits,
often
and it's usually very mild
itself.
So I'm giving an early prediction here that we're going to see
formula.
Some serious snow here in North Texas.
Luxurious predecessor.
The dreaded freezing rain.
Again, coming
probably the worst
ship.
Thing about living here in North Texas, apart from being... Tornado Alley right here in Cleburne, Texas, where I live, which is 20-odd miles due south of Fort Worth.
This
is where Tornado Alley begins. Not 2 miles from my house.
What did you just?
The vortex. Freezing rain along with tornadoes is probably the worst thing that could happen to us here. People along the Gulf Coast, it's hurricanes and earthquakes on the West Coast, and up your way, it's blizzards.
You come to that yet?
So I think we're going to see something that is never before seen throughout the world, especially here in America this winter. Just based upon my observance of what's going on here in North Texas.
And there was another article in the. Paper in Great Britain, they're worried about the. They're saying that they believe that because of the Gulf Stream shutting down, that they're going to average temperature is going to drop 1 degree next year. And there's been a lot of interesting stuff going on.
They're going to
put the word out.
Well, no, I missed that notice that you mentioned.
Yeah, they had you go to coastcoast.com. And hit the it's a news article on the bottom right hand corner on the Coast website.
I don't follow Coast to Coast anymore. I was only in the email once.
I don't know who wrote this. They sure have a rough time here. Then it says following sequel. Oh, honey. No, I need a
George Norrie.
You mentioned it last time we spoke.
Get those two
he
big
Richard
balls.
Hogan has mentioned me several times on different shows. I got emails from people.
All
right.
When are you going to be on the show debating Richard Hogan?
When Richard asked me,
folks, that's news to me.
Yeah.
They're not calling me, and they're not asking me to be on the show, and I don't listen to it. So, but I used to.
It used to be
a religious thing. Every single night.
You're not the only person that I know and we know. It's had a little conflict with Richard.
George? Come on, baby.
Isn't that amazing?
I'll never tell what happened, but I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. And he's on a lot, He's on there every 2-3 days. It's amazing.
He's an impressive man.
Oh, sure he is.
Articulate.
He's very knowledgeable.
Real smart guy. He was a science advisor for CBS.
Oh, yeah.
He was a very young man.
Yeah. Well, there was another Coast guest that...
No.
There was a.
According to what you did, it'll be enough to get you.
Something I recall about a hotel bill. And there was a.
George,
misunderstanding of some kind and a complication on our bill show. And another guest,
I think Art Bell said something about, well, that asked him to apologize to Richard, and the person said, no, we'll do that.
I
think Art Bell said something like,
well,
you chose the wrong side.
And then you're blacklisted. That's the trouble you see with
politics.
Power.
Politics.
Like Art Bell. He has a state radio station and a radio show, really. He can go on and say anything he wants about anybody, and yet they cannot defend themselves. If he says such and such about you, you can't call everybody that, you know, all the millions of listeners and say, hey, he was wrong about that, you know?
Well, I was so disappointed about, George Norrie is such a reasonable guy, but this whole thing about David Bishop and then going over, he was invited to go over and visit Sister Lucia, who was the last surviving Fatima prophecy child before she passed away. Bishop's website was at What Does It Mean .com.
Mr. Bishop.
And then Wayne Green kind of discovered him, and there's been a lot of controversy around him. But anyway, he told George, he said, well, when I get back in Portugal, I'll come on the show and I'll tell all. Well, he didn't know that Sister Lucia naturally was going to swear him to secrecy. And when he came back on the show the next week, he wouldn't tell all. And George Norrie got really mad, asked the two of them, because Wayne Green and he were both on the show, what should people do? Well, Wayne made the mistake of maybe saying, well, you can read this book, which, it's like if they like you, you can plug your book, if you're on the skids with them, forget about it. And so George got mad and banned him from the show, and then for two or three nights after that, he was going after him. And, I don't know what to tell you.
Should you be okay about it?
But, Bishop said, hey, I'm done. He says, I'm done with this.
Okay.
I'm not going to be in the media anymore. And he came back on several months later because he had apparently he was given another message it was a year ago, September, concerning the prophecy. And that was it. He's never going to go back on again, never has. And I'm not going to get any interviews. Very interesting. He was the guy that had the first and only documented prediction of a plane crash. It was documented by the FBI.
Full bodied, but easy to drink. Turns out a lot of other people like that too.
Federal FAA. Interesting cat. But that was it. Wayne had been on, that show 20 or 30 times. It's really kind of interesting. And Bishop was a kind of a quiet guy. He was, he was a organic farmer
Xbox 360 starting at $99.
Upon him. And then there's rumors of plagiarism. And, I look at that and say, the guy didn't know how to write a book. Wayne should write a book. Well, he didn't know how to write a book. He just made it on the rules. I graduated from high school. Who knows? And everybody naturally assumed the worst about the guy. Some people did, so. I don't know. The people that are, like I said, I've always said, the people that are in this business, they get the shaft, one way or the other. All of them have been attacked, or these are sex criminals, or friends of sex criminals. It's really weird.
All right, work with your hands, I'll tell you.
That always stimulates weird.
Work with
doctors. Not real life. It's going to take your body.
Enter the dog.
Someone is. It seems like more attention.
Well, I've noticed since the tsunami that
frustrated and disillusioned with still
interest in prophecy, at least in this show, has kind of waned. And I think what's going on is, well, all this stuff isn't happening. It's not really real, and people are kind of fascinated with it because of
on track.
You know, it's kind of like picking up the Inquirer, you know. But hey, it started getting real when that tsunami hit, and it's been getting more real ever since. And
they broke away.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
It's really fun. You know, I don't know. People are fascinated with prophecy, but things have been sure getting real this year.
Put it in the bag.
It's been a major part of my life since about the age of 9. When I started, you know, hurricanes, tornadoes, storms, you mentioned airplane crash. I predicted one on a radio show up in Canada.
Oh, that's right.
Within 3 days,
I predicted
it would happen. It would happen in a mountainous area where there would be a light snowstorm and the plane would crash into a small hill at the end of the runway.
Let me put that down.
It happened in 3 days.
Oh, my gosh.
I told my doctor about it. And I have on my website at jasonlee.org a letter of testimony from him, Dr. Fisher,
where I told him
on that Tuesday, he said, I listened to you on that talk show on the internet. And, he says, Jason, do you really think when this doesn't happen, how embarrassed are you going to be?
Sure.
And I said, Dr. Fisher, it's going to happen. You know, I promise you it's going to happen. I saw it in a vision, and I know when I dream, I know the difference between a dream and a vision. And this was a vision.
Yeah.
Well, he said, all right, if it happens, he says, I'm a medical doctor. If it happens, I will do anything and everything I can to help prove to, you know, at least the medical society that such a thing is a real human gift. All he ever did was gave me this letter of testimony and gave me permission to post it on the website. And his name on radio interviews, and that's it.
Well, somebody, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Sean David Morton or somebody, made a prediction some months ago that a missile would be shot at an airliner on the West Coast. And they were saying that was a miss, but then somebody called in and told George Murray that there was a story out of San Francisco apparently made into the paper about a rumor that it did happen and the missile missed, and that some people saw it and that the story was suppressed.
Stranded in the middle of
there's some of the people, you know, people like yourself. I've only had just the one prophecy. It was told back in 98 that the year 2005 would be the year of the great havoc, and because of the weather, and write it down, and I did. And but you've had a bunch. I've had one. Well, I've had some other smaller ones that have to do about my, you know, like my personal life and about my that my wife would die during the dark of the moon, and she did. And,
greatest hits.
But yeah, I don't have a lot of prolific. You know, I'm not a psychic or anything like that, or you know, I can't.
So,
those are different gifts. Some people, I couldn't even begin to tell you how psychic comes up with some of the information that they have.
I'm not a psychic, but I always had to stress the point, listen, I am not a psychic, I get predictions that come true, so if you want to call me a prophet, you know, that's fine, but do not call me a psychic, because there were people who would call into the show and say, well, am I going to sell my house, you know, am I going to find a woman, you know,
there was an unissued album.
Now, a lot of people do it, and they do it fairly well, even though, in my view, it's all pretty much generalization. Parlor tricks, you know, and they make quite a good living off of it, you know, and that's what they do as long as no one gets hurt, you know. I can't say ill of them. You know, apart from it's not my cup of tea, and I certainly wouldn't charge money for a prophecy, which I've never done. My health got so bad just over this past year,
1 minute they're broke up,
I had to ask the Great Spirit, God, to withhold the gift from him. Because it was just starting to affect my life and my health in such a detrimental way.
That I said something about the other day.
Oh, it killed Edgar Cayce. Did you see the show Monday night about him? Yeah, it was on History Channel, the other Nostradamus. I got an email from John Hoke, who was on the show. And he said that... he said it's going to be a good show. He says if he said the crew that showed up to at his house to record him, he says that judging from how serious they were about the subject, he says I think it's going to be a very good show, and it was. But now that's a man. Now there's a guy in a class by himself. Absolutely amazing.
His book, Once There Was a Liver.
And now he's run off with a book that's half his age.
I've read a couple of biographies about his life. He's a very fascinating man, about a healer. He was more of a healer than really a prophet. He did make some predictions, which some have come true, most have not. But his main gift in life was healing people.
It was.
That's a wonderful thing.
He talked a lot about Atlantis and stuff, but nobody knew about Atlantis.
That's a very difficult thing to prove, you know.
Apparently somebody has found the chamber below the right paw of the Sphinx, though. About 60 feet below, and they've got the technology where they can even tell if there's something in the chamber, and that it is, it's a man-made chamber.
The MGM records.
I wonder, you know, what is the purpose of
on verge of bankruptcy, and the album was released almost completely unnoticed by their record
publishers. God says,
a scheduled single from the album, The Promised
if
Land.
If a man is a prophet, let him tell his dream. And if his dream comes true, then you know it came from me, saith the Lord. So I feel that a prophet, especially from biblical times, they warned of coming tragedies as a warning. You know, that was the whole idea of it, was to warn the people not to do this, or this is going to happen. And it seems like the poor Hebrews, you know, they were always saying, the prophets would say, don't do this, you know, or this is going to happen, and they'd do it anyway, you know, and just be devastated.
Well, they'd stone them either way.
That's right.
They'd stone them if they were right or stone if they were wrong, you know.
In 1970.
What will they ever learn? You know?
Yeah.
I'm happy to say that I recently had an operation 8 weeks ago. I'm recovering from that really well. and I'm regaining my health. And I have, fortunately, not fallen from God's good graces, because I think the Spirit is in my life and will remain in my life. Although I've had a lot of people criticize me, Otter, for what I mentioned to you earlier about asking him to withhold the gift.
Right,
a God-given gift. I've been saying that for 30 years.
Well, you may have fallen from Rob McConnell's grace, but not from God's.
That's bad.
Oh, jeez.
The thing, though, if someone falls from the grace of God, I really feel so badly for them because. Then they've lost that spirit, the light of the spirit, the spirit of good, and evil knows no direction. It's a magnet put to a compass. You know, it just spins around and around and around, and there's no direction to it. Whereas goodness, there's always that one straight, pure direction, which is always upward.
It is a 20th anniversary tour.
That's certainly
together.
Right. Well, we're glad to hear that you're getting better.
Thank you. I'm thinking very seriously. My album's doing pretty well, and it's amazing. I wanted to tell you.
1990, they gained a lot
more. My song, Wooden Indian. Actually, I wrote the song back in Nashville in the early 80s when I lived there. I was looking at a totem pole, and they had sort of a carving of a wooden Indian, and I sat down and wrote the song on the back of a napkin, and put music to it, and of course, it's not a country song, it's a folk song.
So you were there before they tore down Tootsie's?
Tore down what?
Tootsie's Orchid Lounge. There in Nashville, around the corner from the Grand Ole Opry.
You are. Oh, the Ryman?
Yeah.
I didn't live in the city. I lived in City Row.
Yeah, I don't know if you spent much time downtown, but that was they had moved the Opry out to Opryland, and of course the old Ryman was still there. But Tootsie's Orchid Lounge was this place. You walk in the place, and hundreds of pictures of entertainers. You know, the nicotine on the walls a millimeter thick, and the walls are brown. And absolutely fascinating. It's just a dive, but there's just so much history there. It's unbelievable. So, I spent a little time in Nashville and played country music, commercial country music, especially back in the late 70s.
I enjoyed it, but I never could write it.
I was a front man for a member of the Opie by the name of Warren Purcell.
Ah, well, that's really quite an achievement.
Yeah, well, we were on the West Coast, and he had been an A&R man for Delta Recording Studios in Nashville, and I remember I crossed the street pretty much from RCA, and said Chris Christopherson walked in one day and tried to sell him making through the night, and he couldn't sell the owner from the studio that the... He said, hey, this was going to be a hit, you know, so he went across the street to Chet Atkins, and, you know, the rest of history, and it's amazing music business. But my first love is folk, Gordon Lightfoot. That's where my heart went.
I've got all of his albums. Contract. Wonderful guy. I met him in New Orleans backstage.
I would have loved to
pass. You know, I worked for TV. So I really used that press pass.
Almost lost him a couple of years ago.
Yes, he's very, very ill.
Yeah. Yeah, he was hoping to get back on at least on a few concerts this year, but I haven't heard. He got pretty sick.
Well, if you let me bring back my song, Wooden Indian, I've gotten an email from a disc jockey telling me that on the weekends he plays independent albums from America.
Cool.
And it's so Belgium. He told me the fifth most requested
song. You
know,
for Lost That Love and Feeling was
the by Grey Wolf.
Most
played
US radio.
Belgium? And I had to think for a minute. Wait a minute, where's Belgium? Let's see, is that above France or below it?
Southwest Radio.
Oh, yeah, something above France.
Over
8 million. I spent 3 months in Belgium in 71. Well, I was up with people. It's quite a country.
Well,
they must have good taste in music.
Well,
they do. They love. Yeah, we. I mean, I think they figured that half the people in Belgium did up with people show at one time. We spent. Oh, geez, I can't tell you how many towns we played in Belgium. They just loved us. And of course, we stayed with host families wherever we went. And we had the I'm bored with the names of the towns, but we were all over that. Of course, half the people speak Welsh. The ones who are closer to the Netherlands do, and then half the people that are closer to France speak French. And there was the Flemings and the Walloons. So you know, there's two languages in the country. They have their own king and queen, Baudouin. I think he's still alive. And
I ain't in the hole.
But quite a country. Quite a country. It's amazing. It gave us Jean-Claude Van Damme. And it's interesting. They drink more beer and smoke more cigarettes per capita than Americans. But they don't have any heart disease. French don't either.
Yeah, or stress.
I think it's stress. Because Belgians don't have the same kind of psyche that Americans do. They don't have that. To get ahead, you know, materialistic kind of push. And they're more pretty relaxed people, especially the ones that speak Welsh. The ones that speak French are a little different. But they're more like the French, you know. They're nice people.
I
tell my Canadian friends and my friends over in England.
How about that? It's almost
there. Oh, yeah, boy. Because he's not the truth. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I spent my 16th birthday in Paris. We didn't do any performances in France that year, but they took us all over for a day. And we got to walk around and went to the Louvre and saw all the sights. And it was fun. I went to Europe twice that year with kind of like Young Americans, up with people. 150 kids on stage, songs about the Brotherhood of Man, that kind of stuff. We played Carnegie Hall that year. It was founded in 65, kind of as a cleaned-up version of the hippie movement. So the same kind of songs, only it was clean-cut kids. You know? And continued on, I guess, until a couple years ago. Then they had... tastes have changed, so they dropped the musical program and just had a travel program, and now they're trying to get the feet under them again. But they've been a nonprofit educational corporation since 65. Upwithpeople.com. They're out of near Denver, Colorado. We did the
audition. Audition for something like that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we did the halftime for the Super Bowl that year and played Soldier Field and Carnegie Hall, and boy, it was something. Went to Belgium, Luxembourg, Holland, France, Germany. Came back and went to Canada and Mexico, and then they flew 30 of us back to London, Rome, and Madrid in the spring. And that was a lot of fun.
Wow, what a trip.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Blueauer speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country,
a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
And then didn't have to pay those hotel bills.
No, it was
family. That's great.
It was, and it was me. There was
brotherhood.
Well, Glenn Close is an Up With People alumni, and the only person that really made it in show business. And that year, me and a guy named Mark Beeson is a real well known, or at least was a well known recording guitarist in Nashville. And I played, you know, for a while. I was a vocalist and played bass and backed up a couple bands for a while. But that wasn't the path that Creator chose. I was on that path, and it just wasn't what I was supposed to do. But I enjoyed it. Playing clubs is completely different, you know. from being up with people and, you know, playing all the best places and then go, you know, play for a bunch of drunks. And it was quite different. And
I have a lot of respect for you and anyone who is in a performing band. You know, being a songwriter myself, my calling never was in the performing end of it. I do, on occasion, I go out and play at small coffee houses and places like that, but I just do not enjoy, and I can't imagine, you know, playing for hours on end in nightclubs, you know, and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
That's not my tea. My cup of tea is writing the song and being inspired to write it, and then once it's finished, it's
mm-hmm.
a wonderful thing, and then I go on to the next one.
Yeah.
So many others, it's getting up there and playing and
well, I'll tell you, after 11 months of Up With People, you know, singing the same thing over and over again, you can imagine how the Rolling Stones feel.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But of course, they get paid
for a million times.
They get paid for what they do. You know, no wonder they sound so good. They've played that song 10,000 times live. You know, but it gets old.
Yeah.
Then you learn
Super Bowl this year, the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, boy, there's something else. I'll tell you, but that's what it means to be a professional. Is it's a job. You know, you go out, you play. Even though you played that thing a million times, you just have to get in a mind groove of, hey, we're going to do it better this time. And those guys are pros. There, I didn't.
That poor drummer, you know, Charlie Watts, I think his name is. The poor guy, he's starting to look like Methuselah, you know.
I know it. Isn't it amazing?
And they in the Dallas Morning News, I think it was last week, on the front page they had this gigantic color picture of Mick Jagger and Paul McCartney. And it sort of showed in a bottom thumbnail picture of Mick Jagger, you know, like 30 years ago, and then today, and then Paul McCartney 30 years ago, and then today. And, you know, like, McCartney kind of looks about the same. He's just got a few extra wrinkles.
Yeah.
But Jagger, you know, man, he looks not completely different, but they both look almost the same as they did way back then.
That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Jagger was...
The caption read, they asked Mick, well, how much longer do you think that you're going to continue to play? And he says, we're going to rock till we drop.
Yeah.
I thought, that's it, they're going to die on stage. You
they
know?
Might, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised. Sure was, that was so sad to lose Johnny Cash. That man, first album anybody ever gave me was one of his. And, he was just something else.
When I met him at his home there in Nashville, along the lake there,
mm-hmm.
Now that he's passed away, he had his past tense. He had a giraffe, you know, and a couple of wilder beasts.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding you. He had a camel. He had all these exotic animals, you know, and ostriches, you know. These ostriches are mean little critters.
Oh, yeah, they'll kill you.
And they would stick their head over the fence, you know, and just peck at your hand, you know, try to eat your hand.
Oh, yeah. They could kick you to death. I worked at Lion Country Safari when I was 16, and you didn't go near ostriches or emus. And chimpanzees are actually more dangerous than lions. Because I worked with, remember the marquee chimps from back when you and I were kids?
Oh, yeah.
We watched, the marquee chimps were playing at Lion Country, and I was the only stagehand there for a while, and the guy told me, he says, the chimpanzees, pound for pound, are 6 times stronger than a man. And he says the older they get, the more unpredictable. And he says, and they will kill you. Very dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Getting back to Johnny Cash, when I actually met him in person was at a place called Jack's Tracks Recording Studio. And that's run by Jack Clement.
Oh, yeah.
He's a famous man. He's won a lot of Grammy Awards.
Oh, yeah.
Written some wonderful songs. And I'm 6'3". Johnny Cash was about 6'4", and he reminded me so much of John Wayne. I met John Wayne when I was 20 years old working in TV in New Orleans, because they're not, you know, 6'3" isn't real tall. You know, it's not like 6'6" or 6'8".
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny Cash's hand, when I shook hands with him, it was like shaking the, you know, somebody's foot. You know, I mean,
yeah.
The hand just engulfed my hand, you know,
yeah.
And he's just a big, big, big guy and real wide, you know. I mean, a large boned fella.
Yeah.
I'm a medium boned fella. And even Roseanne, when I met her, she's just a large boned woman.
Yes, she is.
And then I see this movie that's out with Joaquin
Phoenix,
I think his name is. I
haven't seen it yet. Looking forward to it.
Well, this is another, it's like the movie The Aviator, the
mm-hmm.
movie with Leonardo DiCaprio,
mm-hmm.
The story of Howard Hughes. Well, Howard Hughes was 6'3" and weighed
mm-hmm.
185 pounds
sure.
and talked like Tommy Lee Jones, you know, he's from Texas, from Houston. And they get Leonardo DiCaprio, 5'8", blue eyes, blonde hair, to play Howard Hughes. And I kind of wonder about Joaquin, you know, Phoenix, because... I don't know. I just have this feeling they ought to try. If they're going to do a biography movie, they need to find an actor who, you know, kind of resembles
uh-huh.
a real guy, even in height, you know.
Yeah. Well, I saw Johnny one time in concert, and I went back and told Warren about it. And he said, oh, I wish you would have told me. He says, I could have got you in backstage. And Warren had a deep voice, too. And matter of fact, he played... lead guitar on tour with Tennessee Ernie Ford, and Tennessee Ernie let him sing 16 tons on his stage, let him upstage him. And but he said a little. He said Warren told me that Johnny Cash used to call him his little brother No Cash. And Warren lived in the same trailer park with Waylon Jennings and back then, knew everybody. He had a song written for him by Wynn Stewart, and he'd been around for a long time. It's one of those guys that just didn't make it.
Yeah. Well, that happens.
It sure does.
For every star, there's at least 1,000 that don't make it.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. But I got to meet a lot of wonderful people like Red Steagall and Tex Williams. I just hang around the Palomino Club in North Hollywood a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I've heard of the Palomino Club.
Oh, yeah. And one night I was in a club in Norco, California. The band had won the non-touring CMA number one band. And, what's his name? That did Black Singer. James Brown walked in. And, he walked in. He was interested in possibly managing them. And that's back, you know, when his career kind of took a dive. Anyway, he just walked in and asked me if I'd... said, hello, I'm James Brown. He went off, I sit down. I looked up and I said, yeah, you are, aren't you? You talk about big hands. James Brown's a little guy, but he had huge hands. Like, you know, and I've seen the video of him every once in a while. Next time you see him, take a look at the man's hands. They're huge.
Oh, sure.
Just amazing. Just amazing, but... Yeah, it's a lot of fun to meet celebrities, and I found out that Merle Haggard is a shrimpy little guy.
He is.
Yeah, he's a real, he's very, very diminutive kind of a guy. And
he has a place called Master Phonics.
Yeah, he's very shy, retired.
Very shy guy. He rolled his own cigarettes, you know, and he'd put them out on the floor and just, you know, step on them.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I had a friend by the name of Buddy Mize whose brother Billy was he was halfway successful recording artist, and we got invited down to Channel 13 TV, KCOP TV. They were recording a benefit, and got invited to come down and meet Merle, and met him very briefly, and then we got invited to go back on the bus, and the guys in the band, we all went back and talked to this bus driver. Well, the bus driver was his bodyguard. And so we got to talking about this and that. The subject came around to Oki from Muskogee. And the bus driver just busted out laughing. And, you know, we looked at each other like, well, what's this all about? And he said, me, you guys don't know? And we said, know what? He said, well... He said, you know, and of course, Oki from Muskogee was the thing that brought Merle Haggard and his band out of the depths of poverty. But he said the whole thing was ironic. He says they were all stoned driving through Muskogee one day, and they wrote that song. And everybody and everybody thought they were clean cut, and all, but they were all stoners, you know, on that. And that's the other thing about the music business. When you're touring or playing, there's a lot of bad influences. I'm glad I didn't hang around very long because the alcohol, either the booze or the dope will get you.
Oh sure.
And or the women.
I've been exposed to it, so I know.
Oh yeah, or it'll mess up your family relationships. I mean, everybody I knew that had been, just about everybody I knew. With some notable exceptions, they'd lost their families and been through. You know, I knew one fellow that had a hit in '68 on Capitol Records. He re-recorded Roy Orbison's "Crying," and he was very happily married. But I mean, it was an overwhelming obsession to make it back to the top, and he nearly clawed his way back up to the top. He fizzled out again, you know, and but he was, you know, he lost his second wife over that, and it was just so sad to see him, lose that. And there's, I know how precious my family is to me, and but
sure, you have to make choices.
Yeah, you sure do. It killed Hank Williams.
Oh, yeah. 27, he was.
Yeah. It's just amazing, but he knew how to get into the psyche. Matter of fact, this recording artist—I'm not mentioning his name—but the one that lost his wife, he told me that if he had to do all over again, he would spend a year going around the country asking 13-year-old girls to get into their head. He says because they're the ones, and back then, you know, people bought 45s, and even in the 70s, and so the 13-year-old girl, they're the ones that buy most of the music, and they're the one that determines what's going to be a hit.
Sure.
And apparently, we now know that Hank Williams read romance novels, and... he got ideas for his songs from those novels, and when people would catch him reading those things, he would not show them what he was, you know, reading. But we know now he got direct inspiration from those novels. There again, we go, young women, the ones that would actually physically go out and buy the music.
Sure.
But yeah, the music business is a weird business. We've strayed a long way from. It's nice just to talk to somebody that's been in the music business, though. And hey, you think we could send me an MP3 of your song? Can we use it on the show? When
oh,
Indian?
Certainly. I'll send you a copy of the CD.
Oh yeah. Do you have it? Do you have? do you know how to send files by attachment? Have you got it on your hard drive?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, can you just send me an MP3 of it?
I can do that.
Yeah, we'll stick it in the before the show starts.
The song Wooden Indian?
Yeah.
I'd be honored.
Sure, love to. Would love to. Well, I've kept you too long. It's getting pretty late. And,
listen, I hope your wife certainly gets better and you both become just as happy as you can be. And we can spread the joy throughout your show, you know, to all your listeners there, and hopefully...